Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
I have to tell you, it's an honour to meet you. I heard about the pregnant 12-year-old in New Zealand and the paedophile ring. A few of us ladies raised a glass to you shooting the super. Was he the architect of the ring?
The facilitator.
And did he get time?
Turned state witness. He got immunity.
No, it's inefficient people. I can't stand
it. Oh, I'll get you a key. And welcome.
Thanks.
There you go. That's a foul-mouthed clip from Top of the Lake China Girl. It's running on Thursdays at 9 p.m. on BBC Two. James Dempsey joins us once again. Good afternoon, James.
Hi, John.
Should we start with Top of the Lake? This is Top of the Lake China Girl. There was a previous one.
Yeah, and I really think you actually have to do your homework by watching the first season as well. And the good news is it's available on Netflix, all six episodes. So if you have access, if you have access to that, you can do that. And I'm actually glad I did, because I did my homework, I should say, because I sort of started watching the first 5 minutes of China Girl on Sunday, and I thought, maybe I should just really go back and like start at the beginning. And you wouldn't be lost, but you'd be missing out on some major plot points, several spoilers of which were revealed in that clip if you were listening, but surely you were distracted by the other thing.
I hope it wasn't people swear. Sorry for that spoiler.
So it's a murder mystery kind of, it's a murder mystery drama starring TV's hottest property right now, Elizabeth Moss, who people would know, of course, from The Handmaid's Tale, where she plays Offred, and various other things, most notably, I suppose, The West Wing and Mad Men as well. And in this, in the original Top of the Lake, which came out, I think, in 2013, she plays an Australian detective with a not particularly convincing Australian accent, but, you know, we'll let it pass, right? Because who am I to judge Australian accents?
Fair enough. Yeah,
my phonology days are long past. But she plays this detective named Robin Griffin, who is back in New Zealand, where she had originally grown up before emigrating to Sydney. And she's sort of there to see her mother, who has cancer, and gets sort of roped into this case involving a 12-year-old girl named Tui. And this season of Top of the Lake China Girl picks up exactly 4 years later, and she has just returned to Sydney after sort of the prolonged events of what happened at the end of Top of the Lake 1 and what kept her in New Zealand, we'll say, and has returned to work for the Sydney Police Service as a detective, and is now roped into a case which involves the body of a Chinese, well, an Asian woman, I should say, who is inside a suitcase that washes up on Bondi Beach. And the whole thing is made by Jane Campion, who is the, I think she's Australian more so than New Zealand, but I'm not 100% sure, so don't at me on that one. But she, the famous filmmaker of The Piano Days.
Yeah.
And originally, actually, in the first one, it was going to be kind of a piano greatest hits, because originally she had intended to cast Anna Paquin in the role of this detective of Robert Griffin, or Robin Griffin, I should say. And of course, it stars Holly Hunter in the first one in a grey, miserable grey wig. And this time around, we get another Oscar-winning actress in a miserable grey wig in the form of Nicole Kidman, who is making her second TV appearance ever, and also this year, having literally left, I think, the set of Big Little Lies to then go on to the set of making this. So it has got a big name cast, at least, and because you've also got Gwendolyn Christie, who people would know from Star Wars, and also obviously from Game of Thrones, where she's Brienne of Tarth, who we heard in the clip there. I think as a detective show and as a TV show in general, it's sort of more interesting than it is good. I can't say that I'm completely enamored with it. I just find it a little bit odd, more so than anything. Like, first of all, there are no nice men characters in any season of this show. They're all just a bit strange. And the program very much, particularly the first season, presents New Zealand in a very strange light, because you get to see this sort of unbelievably majestic natural splendor of the South Island, and it is absolutely stunning. but all the people are horrible and really like nefarious criminals and nasty, like all these nasty men doing terrible things.
Well, is that a bit of a thing? Now that you, I mean, the three shows that you mentioned, Handmaid's Tale, Big Little Lies and this, all men are bastards. There isn't one nice man in any of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's maybe one nice man in this season of Top of the Lake, which I won't really want, I don't want to go into, because if you watch the first season, it'll kind of be a spoiler. But I don't know. Like, the whole point of this show is really about, it is about women and how men affect them in a criminal sense, and then how those women who are the sort of, we'll say, victims or survivors of crimes get on with their lives. That is sort of fundamentally what this show is about. However, it also has this very strange undercurrent of dark black humour that comes along just every now and again and is incredibly funny. I mean, there's a scene early on, so Gwendolyn Christie, who obviously is this incredibly like statuesque, you know, tall Amazonian woman, plays this real bumbling, useless, like on the beat cop, right, whose name is Miranda, and she's Robin's sort of right hand woman. She's put on the case with her, and there's a scene early on where they're going down to examine this suitcase that is washed up on Bondi Beach, and Miranda sort of jumps down onto the beach and off this sort of parapet and sort of reaches her hands up to lift down Robin to help her, who just gives her sort of a dirty look and walks down the ramp instead. And it has these moments of really like almost surrealist. I mean, if you stick with it, it gets absolutely bonkers in about the third episode.
Right.
Like really odd. Some odd stuff is going on, which to me is kind of at odds with everything else that's going on in the show, because it is also pretending to be this sort of very important and serious and intriguing drama. So it's the kind of show that just, it bewitched me, but it didn't convince me of why I was so taken by it, because I want to know what happens and I'm intrigued by the acting. But at the same time, the plot is so convoluted that half the time I'm not sure if I'm getting all of it.
That can be frustrating.
And that might be also the fact that I mainlined 6 hours of it in 2 days, which is not, you know, is never the best way really to enjoy something in any sort of substantive way. But it certainly is intriguing, and I would say it's worth giving a go. But you have to do your homework, and I would say measure the pace as well.
Though then again, if you kind of watch 6 hours of it, aren't you more likely to understand the plot points rather than, like, I'm back to, like, watch the first six episodes or six series of Game of Thrones kind of in one binge. Yeah. And now it's like once a week and they keep having to pause it to explain to the old man what's going on kind of thing, because I can't remember her. It sounds kind of great, though, in a bonkers way.
Yeah, I do think, like, there is something incredibly compelling and interesting about it. But again, I would say I can't quite put my finger on what I like about it or what I don't like about it. It has a certain kind of dreamlike quality at some points to it, which is probably what Jane Campion is going for, because that is kind of what her film, you know, oeuvre, if I can use that word, is based on that kind of strange otherworldliness. And yeah, I mean, it also just depicts all Antipodean men. That's just horrible.
Maybe they're not that nice. Maybe that's the reality of it. Ron says, a few people actually texting in saying, give a lot of love for Elizabeth Moss. And obviously she's like queen of telly at the moment, but that her accent isn't the best.
No, it isn't.
In this particular production. Just finished watching Flaked on Netflix. I really enjoyed it.
So that's I haven't seen it. So that's the Will Arnett show. I think there are two seasons of it. And I think it's about a guy who's recovering from an addiction to something in Southern California somewhere. And I know an Irish actress has a lead role in the first season. I'm not sure if she's in the second season or not. So I haven't seen that. But clearly Netflix has struck a deal with the Arrested Development people to just keep them busy until they bring them back.
Emer says, just watched Ozark after James's review. It's brilliant. So dark yet humorous. I've never seen Jason Bateman in that kind of role. He's so good. Love it. I recommended it to my my father, however, without realising just how much oral sex is in it. He will not enjoy those parts, I can tell you. How do you know, Emer? How do you know? It might open his eyes or close them. Ron says, a few weeks ago, James was talking about Francis Brennan's tour of Vietnam. He didn't quite recommend it, nor did he completely rubbish it. So I thought I'd give it a go. Well, my God, what the hell is going on there? Is this show for real or is it a mockumentary? Surely this is Spinal Tap of travel shows. I watched it as a Sunday night hangover TV. It only made the fear worse. Am I missing something or is it really this bad?
I think you just need to drink the Kool-Aid on that one. I think you just have to get on board with the sort of bizarre travelogue thing that that is, because Francis Brennan almost defies any kind of, you know, definition of a TV personality, because he just is completely and utterly his own thing and is unapologetic and unabashedly unashamed of all of it, and rightly so. And he's just kind of an odd in the nicest way, eccentric, I suppose, is what I should say, TV character. The people on the show I'm not quite as enamoured with, but the whole package I find a bit bonkers and strange.
The format just seems, because it sounds slightly, not slightly, but very pointless. It's just like, here's a lot of people with Francis Brennan, they go to another country.
I mean, I would actually just rather watch Francis go around doing all the things.
Yeah, rather than with all the puzzle-looking people with him. Anyway, some more TV news. Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, another person who returned to the screens on Big Little Lies, they're going to work together on a new show.
They are. And Reese Witherspoon, you would say, is also really becoming a bit of a TV mogul and production mogul in her own right, because she spearheaded getting Big Little Lies off the ground. It was, you know, one of the most talked about shows of the year, garnered many Emmy nominations. And now she is producing and starring in this new show with Jennifer Aniston, which they're sort of shopping around to different networks now. But by networks, I mean the premium ones. We're talking HBO or and also Netflix, stuff like that. So it is as yet untitled. All we know about it is that it's a show about sort of morning TV shows and the New York media bubble that surrounds them. So you could easily see the pair of them as, you know, presenters of, you know, the Today Show or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be something along the lines of that. And yeah, it'll probably be coming, I guess, in 2018. But this will be Jennifer Aniston's first real proper, you know, return to TV since Friends ended. I mean, she's done a couple of guest starring roles here and there. But apart from that, I mean, she hasn't...
Really? She hasn't done any TV since...
She's done, you know, she did an episode of 30 Rock, an episode of Dirt, which was Courtney Cox's...
Didn't she do Cougar Town?
It was Dirt, I think, more so than Cougar Town. I'm not 100%.
It was the other one that was in Cougar Town. That wasn't Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, that was
the dark haired one.
Yeah. Courtney Cox was the cougar.
Was she not in as the guru? Claire is arguing with you now.
You know what, Claire?
Through me.
I didn't watch Cougar Town, so I defer to your knowledge here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay, but she's going to give you a good slap.
Sure.
We can wear it to the studio. the sitcom Kevin Can Wait is taking a rather unusual step.
This, I think, is a very just interesting story, right? So Kevin Can Wait is a sort of everyday American sitcom, the likes of which there are a million versions of, and it stars Kevin James, who people will know from way back when he was in King of Queens. And it's broadcast on E4. I've never seen an episode of it, so I can't speak to its quality. But a couple of seasons into the show, as a cameo, they had his King of Queens co-star Leah Remini just appear in an episode. And in the show, he plays a retired cop, and I think she's a detective in the show. And very surprisingly, that night it was the top-rated show on TV because people wanted to tune in to see this reunion. So the producers decided to write her in as a regular on the show, and they've now decided to make her the top billed female co-star. Except in the show, he has a wife, so they're just going to kill her off.
Oh dear!
Which is quite an odd choice for, you know, a
lighthearted family. Kind of humiliating for her as well as anything else.
Yeah, and let me say her name. Her name is Erin Hayes. Before she's completely washed out of history. Yeah.
Poor old Erin Hayes. Who knows? Erin Hayes might appear on the next show we're going to talk about, because it is a play. It is a show involving lots of people no one's ever heard of in a room on a channel hardly anybody watches. Can you guess what it is?
11:33 p.m. Jordan is very impressed with Trisha's look.
I love your outfit, you know what?
You have a lot of energy.
I know, I do, I'm
How
sorry.
How old are you?
Old enough for you.
Are you 18?
No, I'm 25.
What do you do?
Reality TV. I'm a club rep in Ibiza.
What are you famous for, though? That?
Well, being a bit of a naughty boy. You couldn't say.
He's on reality TV. He does.
You know, reality TV. Like,
you do stupid things. I can tell. You're like extra.
No, I'm not extra.
He's a star.
Oh, God. How could you listen to that accent? Anyway, that is a clip from Celebrity Big Brother. It's on every night at 9 p.m. on 3E, so be warned. James?
Yeah, so, I mean, the reason why I kind of thought of doing this week is because at the beginning of the Love Island broadcast I talked about Love Island, mm-hmm. and I clearly called it wrong because I said, you know, how could anybody watch more than three episodes of this? I'm giving up. And it became, you know, one of the most sort of buzzed, talked about shows of the summer, really. And I feel like I completely was left out of the Love Island love-in. So I thought I would probably just see if Celebrity Big Brother is worth having, you know, a go at. And what I actually didn't realise is, if you look at the history of Big Brother in general, and then of Celebrity Big Brother in particular, I didn't realise Celebrity Big Brother is now on twice a year on Channel 5. They come out with one in January, and then in August they come out with the second one. So this is our second version of it this summer, or this calendar year, I should say. So I'm completely out of the loop. In terms of the celebrities, I mean, there's the usual mix of people you would actually know and then people you have absolutely no idea who they are. So you've Derek Acora, the celebrity medium, Sandy Bogle of Gogglebox fame, Paul Dannon, I think, the actor who is a very strange person. We heard in the clip there Jordan Davis, who is a reality TV star, talking to a woman named Trisha Paytas, who is a YouTuber who I know even less about.
To be honest, but I have a 15-year-old who got very excited when the YouTuber came out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that shows, again, the sort of demographic splits of YouTube and why all TV is absolutely dire straits
redundant.
Going forward.
Yeah.
Anyway, says the radio people. Anyway, yeah. So, look, as I watched the first two episodes, which was the launch night, which is actually, I mean, a very long, tedious, like, just introduction of them. They gave Barry from EastEnders, Sean Williamson, this pointless task.
Poor
Barry. Which he, you know, it's actually kind of interesting because, you know, the way, obviously people know him from EastEnders, and then he was on Extras where he played, you know, the spoof version of himself.
Yeah.
And then Extras ended with this sort of Christmas finale that was all about Celebrity Big Brother, where he went on. And so, you know, it's literally going full circle here. So, look, you know what you're getting with this kind of nonsense. You're getting celebrities, quote unquote, who are throwing the dice at either reigniting their career, ultimately fading into absolute obscurity, or destroying their career. So you are watching it for that kind of spectacle.
I think the last one isn't really an option because
I would say that to Jade Goody before she went back into the Celebrity Big Brother house in 2007 and really, really did just untold damage to herself. But while watching the hour last night, which was the first night, it was horrifically tedious. They looked like they were, I mean, some of them look like, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions on anyone, but some of them look like they had been chemically fueled before they had entered the house, if I could put it that way.
Yeah. A lot of twitching and nervous look.
A lot of manic energy.
Yeah.
While watching it, I was just struck by the thought that this is what it is like standing in the smoking area of a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning, which I don't like doing anyway. So I wouldn't subject myself to a summer-long version of that. So I'm going to bow out after one episode and I'm going to say that this is not going to become as buzzed or interesting I use again in inverted commas, as Love Island, which somehow managed to just grab on to some sort of pop cultural zeitgeist moment.
Why? What happened in Love Island that was so?
I just think people thought it was really, like, oddly charming, which I just didn't get.
Okay.
But maybe if I'd stuck with it, I would have been, you know, wooed with them. But yeah, this is just pants, and I don't think it's worth watching.
But of course, you don't know if somebody emerges as a baddie and if there's a big row. It seems to work basically based on rows.
Yeah, I mean,
you can take sides with people and root for people.
Very much so. And I mean, I guess they have added an extra layer of nonsense this time by saying that the winner will get a £50,000 donation towards the charity of their choice, which just means that, you know, I mean, obviously, they're getting paid more than £50,000 to do it.
Yeah, right? It makes them look nicer.
It makes them look nicer. But really, the whole thing is just, I don't know what you're going to get anything. I don't know if you're not going to get anything new or interesting out of this group of, you know, celebrities. I think. That is what I'm saying. So I don't know if it's worth it.
But I hate to say this to you, James. Are you and I too old to appreciate Celebrity Big Brother or even the regular sort?
Potentially. But actually, right, so I was kind of surprised by how many of them I recognised and didn't recognise, because I listened to this great podcast called Who Weekly that's all about D-list celebrities. And you mightn't think that's a good podcast, but it just exposes all the nonsense that they do. And it's very interesting and funny. And a lot of these people, you know, I was going, who, these are total who's, as in people you would say, who is that? So observing celebrity and looking at it through a lens can be very interesting, but not through this lens.
Okay, that's Celebrity Big Brother on 9 p.m. 3E every night for I think the next 7 weeks. By the way, Top of the Lake China Girl is on Thursdays at 9 p.m. on BBC Two. Now the first episode has gone out, and I don't know if there's any legal way to watch the first episode of the new series. 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown is our next programme. Here's a clip.
I'm John's teammate, Jonathan Ross. Fun fact, Jonathan first appeared on screen age 10 in an advert for Kellogg's Rice Krispies. Yeah. He was a terrible choice, of course, because they're not called Kellogg's Weiss Wispies.
Well, I can say the word, I can say crispy, okay. It wouldn't have been Weiss Wispies, it would have been Weiss Krispies.
Just for fun, could you say my name?
Yeah. You know your name. I know your name.
Yeah.
Why do we have to say it out loud? I see now because now. The next thing is, if I focus on it, I can say okay. So I could take Rachel Riley, if I really work at it.
Right.
But no, well, no, really.
That's the most patronising round of applause.
That's the most condescending thing.
There you go. 8 out of 10 cats. Now, part of the reason why this is a regular thing on Channel 4 is at the weekend, but this has become a daytime show now.
No. So this is, well, it's still an evening show because they do a bit of, you know, foul-mouthed banter every now and then.
Okay.
But this started off several years ago when Channel 4 was celebrating its 30th anniversary, and they did a kind of a week-long mashup where they just sort of mashed two shows together. So they mashed 8 out of 10 Cats, their sort of comedy panel show, of which there are a million different ones on British TV, with Countdown, everyone's, you know, the longest running show, I think, on Channel 4, the very infamous, or very famous, I should say, daytime numbers and letters quiz show. So it has now just become so popular that it is now a regular feature on the Channel 4 schedules. And I think it's probably about 2 or 3 seasons, quote unquote, that come out every year. And I think it is an interesting show because I think it somehow manages to elevate both of the shows that it is that are being mashed together. Because obviously, look, the thing about Countdown is it's fun, the music is brilliant, but it's really boring.
but Countdown had a huge following, mostly among stone students.
Yeah.
As far, you know, the, oh, I'll get up at 5 and watch Countdown.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, Countdown is just something that it's not appointment viewing. It's something that if you're flicking through the channels, doing the ironing, and is on, you might stick it on because you might want to do well in the numbers or the letters or get the conundrum, which I've never once gotten in my life. 8 out of 10 Cats is a very generic comedy panel show of which I could barely tell you even what the premise is now.
Yeah.
Right? Talking about something that happened in the week, maybe something to do with statistics, I think, or polls or something like that. This marriage of the two somehow produces the best of both of them because you get funny people playing Countdown.
Yes. Right? But it is actually Countdown, just with a different cast. There's no element from 8 out of 10 Cats.
No, except for the host, Jimmy Carr, obviously.
And a few gags.
Yeah, instead of you know, single players playing against each other, it's teams.
Mm.
So, and their captains are Sean Locke and John Richardson. And Rachel Riley does the numbers and the letters as ever. Susie Dent looks like just fuming through the whole thing as they make fun of her and sort of, you know, don't denigrate the entire Countdown back catalogue. But it just, the combination of both, I think, works extremely well. And also what's fun about it is, as an at-home player, because when presented with the, you know, the Countdown numbers and or letters, you and the 30-second, you know, music, you cannot but try to find a word and or solve the maths quiz. So you're playing against comedians
who are smart, actually.
Who are smart, but not Countdown smart.
Yeah, yeah.
they can normally muster about a 5, maybe a 6 at best.
Yeah.
Which is what I can do on a good day. I'm rubbish at countdown. I much prefer the maths for some reason than the letters. So as an at-home viewer, you get the comedy, you get the countdown, and then you get an achievable person that you can potentially beat, which I think is a nice trifecta of good television.
Okay, fair enough. James is definitely a fan. Anna in Galway has texted in to say, James has the sexiest voice. Crikey. There you go.
Thank you, Anna.
Okay, thanks very much, sexy James Dempsey.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas